from our national office, we are pleased to welcome our immediate past president and his wife, Patricia Maurer. We are fortunate to have our favorite son come back to Indiana and grace us with their presence. You've been here. I'm yelling last night at that darn talent show. I wasn't singing though, man. You, I was just yelling. Anyway, I'm here to present our national report is Dr. Mark Maurer.
I keep my eyes wide open all the time. I came here in 1970, and in 1973, I induced Patricia Maurer to come here also. And we came to look for an apartment in South Bend, and I persuaded my father to drive a car with a trailer over there to bring all of our possessions, which weren't very many, but they were as many as they were. And he drove up in front of the place and he said, "Looks awful." And Patricia Maurer was sad. She hadn't been Patricia Maurer very long, but she was very sad. And then my father was sorry. But we unloaded anyway and stayed there. And when my dad told my mom about it, she said, "Well, I don't imagine it was any worse than some of the apartments we had when we were there." So we survived there. And I want to offer Patricia Maurer an opportunity to say hello first.
All right.
Okay, well, good morning, you guys. It's great to be back in Indiana.
Yeah.
It's great to be with all of you this weekend. We didn't have a ratty apartment, but things did get badder, so it's okay. It's really okay. We had some great times when we lived in South Bend and in Indianapolis, and we were thinking about some of them yesterday. And, you know, every time I come back, you know, the memories are great, right? But also the things that is great is to be back here and we can help you guys to plan for the future of the NFP of Indiana and the NFP. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah.
You didn't want to tell them about the time you had a critter living in the oven.
No. I mean, tell them you had to get up and feed on the floor.
Well, it was easy to get the critter out of the oven. All I had to do was turn it on. But the trouble is, where did it go then? You know? We got through that. Have we all not had troubles like that? So I'm immediate past president of the National Federation of the Blind. I was president for quite a while, but I'm not now. I stopped doing that in 2014. And so we have a new president, Mark Ritabono. And Mark Ritabono wanted me to bring greetings to you from him. He would like to be at all of our state conventions, but he can't come to them all. And so he wanted me to say hello to you. He's at our D.C. convention this week. And D.C. also has some importance in the world. I realized that, it's only D.C., but on the other hand, it does at least have something to recommend. That's where he is, and he is undoubtedly thinking about all the other state conventions that are happening this weekend, including ours right here in Indiana.
Yeah.
Now, we had Jordan and Jada, right?
Yes.
And they came yesterday, and they were on our television program that has to do with Newsline, and that our good friend Lee Martin put together, right, Lee?
Yes.
And so Jada and Jordan, and they came and they gave us the pledge, the Federation pledge, and the 1 minute message. Are they going to do it again today? They're not? They are. They're going to do it tonight, the banquet?
All right. Excellent.
Okay. I was going to cover the 1 minute message and the pledge today, but I'm not going to because I'm waiting for them. We have had the pledge, the Federation pledge. Anybody remember when the Federation pledge started?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah.
And when was it, Ron? When did we start? I can do it. And you can do it, and I can do it. We can do it together. But you know when we first did it?
I don't know.
Well, my memory is not as good as some, and so I don't know either. But I do remember that I looked at some records of the history of the National Federation of the Blind. And we have, it really isn't that bad. It might be bad for you though. I know. But it's pretty good here. So, anyway, I didn't mean to be interrupted. But I just love little kids, don't you know? And my children, I loved them when they were little kids, and I still love them now that they're big people. And I've talked to them about little kids, and David Maurer said, yeah, but they're so expensive. And I said to him, Dave, I know. So anyway, I love little kids. The pledge. I was looking at the records, and we didn't write the presidential report until 1982. So you were in the room when some of those presidential reports were given, Rob.
Absolutely.
Before 1982.
Yes, sir.
And they were fabulous.
Yes, sir.
They were rocking. They were moving.
Yeah.
Dr. Gehringer just got up there and had a bunch of notes and looked at the notes and said what he said. And they were rocking. But in 1974, he had a note that said we should have a Federation pledge, and he had the text of the Federation pledge right there in the notes from 1974. And it says, I pledge to participate actively in the efforts of the National Federation of the Blind to achieve equality, opportunity, and security for the blind, to support the policies and programs of the Federation, and to abide by its constitution.
Yeah.
And Dr. Gehringer, on the platform in 1974, I was there, I was in Chicago, at the Palmer House Hotel, and I was in the ballroom, and he was in the ballroom, and he said, if you don't believe that, don't pay your dues. We want you if you believe it. If you don't pay your dues. That made sense to me. I've been paying my dues ever since. But I paid them before that, too. Now, I'll leave the 1 minute message till later. The 1 minute message came later on, and that message is intended to incorporate, in a minute or less, the meaning of the National Federation of the Blind. And we put that together. My memory is we put that together in 2014, but I don't swear to it, I just believe it. Now, that's the greeting from President Picabono. I just want you to know that he would like to be here, and the 1 minute message, he said we have a whole lot of important stuff in the National Federation of the Blind, and we have to tell people about it, but he said there are lots of people who don't know how to say what the Federation is in a minute or less. What is the elevator speech? And he said, you know, we really need an elevator speech And so I said to him, well, go find somebody who can help us find out how to do it then. And so we got some expert people on advertising to come talk to us. And then we had our one-minute message, which if you read the literature about telling people what you are and all that sort of thing, and if you like that literature, you know about the notion of the elevator speech. Suppose that you and John D. Rockefeller were in the elevator going up to the 28th floor, and you have that time to tell them what we do. You got to have a message that you can get together in that time, and you can impress somebody in those seconds that you have, because that's all you get. And so now we have that as our elevator speech. It's called the one-minute message because it's, you know, much more impressive sounding than an elevator speech. You don't want to call it the elevator speech. I know I did that, but, you know, don't do it. Just call it our one-minute message. Now, we had a convention in 2018. How many people went?
Yay!
Yeah, that was a good convention. I had a great time at that convention. We got lots of stuff done. And, you know, in the last little bit, we have been getting attention from all sorts of people in the government of the United States. And this is what we've been trying to do all along, but from time to time, these things go in waves, and sometimes people say, well, you know, we believe in what you do, but if we come and we have somebody from the administration come and talk to you, that sounds like an endorsement, and you'll advertise it, and people will think that we're endorsing you, and there are so many competing interests and all this jabber. But we've been getting some members of the cabinet to come talk to us. And we need to talk to the members of the cabinet because sometimes the members of the Congress are slower to listen than they might be. And consequently, we are going to have a convention in 2019. And we're going to invite people to come. And who's going to come to that convention?
Well,
I don't know who from the administration, but I know I'm going to be there. So when is this convention?
July
7th
through the
12th. July 7th through the 12th of 2019. And where is the convention going to be?
Las Vegas!
Yes, it's going to be at the Mandalay Bay Hotel in Las Vegas, Nevada.
Yeah.
How many of you have been to Las Vegas?
Yeah.
Some of you have, huh? I've been to Las Vegas. They're willing to take your money there. Yeah. They have all manner of ways to take it from you. And they promise that if you're very, very, very lucky, you can take some of theirs. But they'll get more of yours than you'll get of theirs usually. So keep that in mind when you go there, because they're quite clear about it. You put your money in here, and if you're very, 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 very lucky, you can get some back. And maybe put a lot back, but unless you're very, 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 very lucky, you get to keep your money. And they don't, you know, hold back on that. It's $99 a night to go there. In other words, it's a great hotel rate. It's going to be the 7th through the 12th. This year, you get to spend the 4th of July somewhere else besides the National Convention. I don't know what you're going to do on the 4th of July. I've always been at the National Convention almost ever since I started. There was that one year that we weren't, and I kept thinking, well, shall I go to a 4th of July celebration? Shall we have a picnic? What do people do on the 4th of July? You know. I'm willing to try it again, but mostly I'm going to look forward to the National Convention, and I'll be there, and I hope you'll come too, because we need you at the National Convention.
Yeah.
You know, I went to the 1969 National Convention. That was the first one I attended, and I went there because Dr. Dunnigan talked me into it, and he said, I need you at the National Convention. He said, we got to show people what the world is like for blind people. Well, I had been in the National Federation of the Blind Experience. I hadn't even paid my dues then. So, in one sense, I wasn't a member, although I certainly felt like a member by the time that convention was over. But I'd never been to a chapter meeting. I didn't know anything about it. And he said, would you be willing to go to help tell people what blindness is all about? And I thought, I'll help those blind people, no problem. And besides, I was getting a free trip out of it. At the time, because I was a first-timer and all, and Dr. Dunnigan worked out the expenses. And I thought, this is great, I'll go to the convention, I'll find out a way to tell people things. And I got through with the convention, and I thought, Dr. Turnagain didn't need me there. He knew what he was doing. He didn't need me to tell him or anybody else that. And I told that story later, and he said, you are wrong. He said, if you hadn't come there and learned what you learned, and if you hadn't taken up this challenge and done what you've done since, what would we have done without you? We needed you urgently at that convention, although we didn't know how much. So what I'm telling you is this. We need you urgently at this summer's convention that's going to happen in Las Vegas, and I want you to figure out a way to get there. I want you to raise the money. I want you to get into your chapters and find ways to build opportunities to go to this convention, because we need you urgently there. Do we know specifically why? Maybe not, but we need you to come, because we've got things that are going to happen at that convention, and you should be involved in them. You should help to fill out the experience of blind people of the nation and make it your convention, and make it something that is so important that it will change the future of the blind of this nation and this world. That's what we're doing at the National Convention in 2019. Now, we talk about Newsline. I certainly know we talk about it in Indiana because we have this television program in Indiana, and I was on a television program on Thursday night, and I know it's going to be broadcast later. And I even made a mistake on the program. Patricia Maurer corrected it, however.
Oh, yeah, I'm always there.
So she was on top of it. So she corrected me right out of the program. You can observe this, you can see it on television. And we talk about Newsline, and I think it's a great thing. We have hundreds of newspapers and dozens of magazines, and later on this year we are going to get a new form of the Newsline app together. The Newsline app is going to go on your phone. Some of you have it on your phone. How many of you have it on your phone? And I have it on my phone, and the Newsline app that goes on your phone is also going to include the KNFB reader. So we're going to be able to point, shoot, and read with the Newsline app. And it's going to be, you know how much it's going to cost? It's going to be free. You can get, it's not going to be as quite as complex as the complex app that I've got on my phone called KNFB Reader. So it won't do everything that the Canopy Reader does, but if what you want is a point, shoot, and read, that you will get on the Newsline app, and it's free. Now you won't be able to save the stuff that you get and all of that. But if you want to buy that one, it's $100 or $99.99 or something, and you can buy that in the App Store. But if you want to just get it on these other things, then you're just going to get the new KNFB reader as part of your Newsline app. So get your Newsline app. If you don't have it already, you can get it from the web store, and it's the KNFB app. What?
Nothing.
You want to correct this?
No, I don't.
I'm just asking. We also need to advertise about these things, and so we have some new PSAs on our website. You want to get them, you go to our website, and you go to nfb.org/PSAs, and you'll find some new PSAs. And what we're trying to do is get people to play them on the air, and so if you'll get them and then send them to your radio stations, they'll take them more readily from you than they will from me, say. Because if I'm in Baltimore and I say, here's some PSAs from the NFT, they'll say, yeah, that's the people from out of town. But if you send them, you're the local people, and so they'll run it. So I urge that you get these PSAs. Now, see, it is better, isn't it? there is a treaty that we've been working on, and it is a treaty that we worked out with the World Intellectual Property Organization of the United Nations. There. Mr. President, I hope I can get this through. And it is called the Marrakesh Treaty to Facilitate Access to Published Works for Persons Who Are Blind, Visually Impaired, or Otherwise Print Disabled. That's the name of what's come to be known as the Marrakesh Treaty. And I sent two people over to Marrakesh and told them to work on this treaty. And it was in June. I would have gone myself. I had worked out with the Obama administration that there ought to be some sort of a treaty negotiation. And I had talked to the people in the Commerce Department, and they said, well, you know, we can't get a treaty through the United Nations because that's very complicated. And furthermore, a soft law understanding where you have a sort of an international agreement is much easier to do, and it would be better for the United States, and I don't know why you want a treaty. Anyway, it takes too long. It'll take at least 20 years. And so, and that's supposing that you can do it at all, which is probably unlikely. And I said, it depends a lot on how you manage the politics of it all. And I finally said to the people in the Commerce Department, we are not doing it that way. We're going to go for an international treaty. I was shamed into it, frankly, by some people from Australia who told me, why are you going for the small stuff? Why don't you believe in blind people? And I thought, well, God, that's the story I've been telling all along. Why don't I believe in blind people anyway? So I thought, we can probably work an international treaty if we want to. And so we got the folks at the, in Geneva and WIPO, the World Intellectual Property Organization, to get together and to adopt a recommended treaty. And then we went to Marrakesh for an international conference. They call it a DIPCON, which is a diplomatic conference where all the delegates from all the countries get together, and the United States have by this time been persuaded to go for it. And, you know, this was not our choice. We had to get the Commerce Department to believe in it, and then we had to get the Obama administration to believe in it. And we went there, and but they did believe in it after a while, and they said, we're going to support you on this. And so we got this thing through the World Intellectual Property Organization, and that's the part of the United Nations that works on treaties that have to do with copyright. And so the Marrakesh Treaty was adopted, and it was adopted in 2013. So, and it was tentatively signed by somebody in the State Department, and but this was only a signing that was ceremonial, and that happened in New York up at the United Nations, and I went up and participated in that meeting. And then they said, okay, so now you've got this, that has been adopted by the United Nations, and what you've got to do is you've got to get the Senate of the United States to agree. Because it can't be legal in the United States unless two-thirds of the senators vote for it. And they said, you have to have a two-thirds majority. And we thought, how do you get two-thirds of the Senate to do anything? The Senate passed the treaty, advice and consent to the President of the United States on this treaty on June 28th.
Yeah.
That was good. That was really good. It's not done, but it's good. The law in the United States is that a treaty doesn't go into effect until there's a law implementing the provisions of the treaty, even if the Senate has voted for it, even if the President has signed it. So there's an Implementation Act, and you've got to get the Implementation Act through. And we started working on the Implementation Act as soon as it was passed by the United Nations, which happened back in 2013. And so we sent it over to the State Department. It wasn't 2013, it was 2012, because we wanted to get it out before the Obama administration left, and they wouldn't do it. They just sat on their hands. And I kept thinking to myself, if we could just get this thing through, we could get this thing out of here, and they wouldn't do it, and it came to be 2013, and we had a new president. And I thought, what are we going to do? Well, the Senate passed the treaty, and we had an implementation thing that came out of the State Department. There was an argument about whether or not this treaty would work in Marrakesh, and the argument happened all over again in the State Department, and the same people were arguing the same points, and then we got it through the State Department, and the package came out, and it came to the Senate of the United States, and of course the libraries got together, and they said, we have to have this immediately, and the publishers came out, and they said, no, we can't do it, and the library said, you have been limiting the right of privacy, and you can't do that, and the publisher said, you've been stealing our intellectual property, and you can't do that, and the same argument was happening right there in front of the Senate floor on the Judiciary Committee and the Foreign Relations Committee and the Foreign Relations Committee and the Judiciary Committee. Finally, they said, what are the blind thing? And we said, we like the treaty. And they said, we're going with the blind. So they got the publishers and they got the librarians in the same room, and they said, this was the majority and the minority, both the staff of the committee, and they said, you see those blind people there? We're going with them. We're going to go do what they recommend. So you work out the details. Well, if you can't agree on this, we're going to ask the blind, and what they say, that's what we're going to do. So the Implementation Act went to the Congress, and it was adopted by the Senate on the 28th of June, same day as the treaty was signed. Okay? The House didn't adopt it, but the Senate did. But it did go to the House. And it was adopted by the House of Representatives on the 25th of September. And it was delivered to the President of the United States on the 28th of December. September, is that what I didn't say that? Oh, well, it was September. Anyway. If I say December, that hadn't happened yet. And it was signed by the President on the 10th of October. Hey! So this thing that people say that nobody ever gets right, this thing that people said you can't get through the United Nations, and even if you do, it won't be adopted by the Senate of the United States, and even then you can't get the law adopted to change it. And if it does happen, it's going to take at least 20 years. It took us less than half of that, and it's done, and we've demonstrated the power of the National Federation of Dance. Yeah. You know, there are those who say that we're in a period of deadlock and you can't ever get anything done. We have been working to try to get the opportunity for permanently and totally disabled veterans to fly on space-available planes. And that act was adopted in August. So we've done two this year. In this year, when nobody gets anything done, we've done two. Now, we have a lot more to do. I'm not saying we're done, but I thought maybe we ought to talk about how it is that if we have the faith to believe that we can get something in there, we have the possibility of changing the way things go. Now, it's not all legislation. You may remember, those of you who were at the National Convention this summer, you were at the National Convention and you heard that we were going to have a partnership. How many partnerships have we got? Have we got partnerships left and right? There are partnerships all over the place. But we were going to have a partnership with Kellogg's. I don't remember which of all the things are Kellogg's. Is Tony the Tiger a Kellogg man? I think so, but I don't. But I'll tell you one thing that I know for sure. Rice Krispie Treats are from Kellogg's. And if you want to do so, you can go right down there and you can get yourself some Rice Krispie Treats, and you can get some stickers to put on your Rice Krispie Treats, and the stickers are in Braille. Also in print. You know, a lot of stuff in print. Kellogg's prints a lot of stuff. But they haven't done much Braille. But they have a partnership with the National Federation of the Blind to put together Rice Krispie Treat boxes that have Braille stickers on them with notes that say things like love you lots and you got this and so on. Yeah, upbeat messages for the kids. And then also the boxes have recorded messages, and you can re-record them if you want to. It's a little 10-second recorded message, and when you open the box, the message comes out. It's in your, whatever voice you recorded in. It's got a recordable chip in it, and you can re-record it many times. And so you can buy these Rice Krispie Treats and get the message on it to put in the lunch boxes. We have this partnership with Kellogg's, and we're going to try to develop this into more partnerships with Kellogg's to do more things. You know, if you go to the United Kingdom, how many of you have been to the United Kingdom? Not too many, just one over there, Patricia Maurer.
Yeah.
We've been to London a couple of times. I'll tell you some stories about London. It's an interesting place. But if you walk into a pharmacist over there, they call them a chemist shop over there. And if you walk in there and you lay your hand down on the place where they got the tongues and stuff like that, it's in Braille.
Wow.
All the stuff that might be medically related is identified, it's labeled with Braille labels. And so there are places in the world where you can get a lot of Braille. And we want to get more Braille into the hands of more blind people. We want blind people to learn Braille. It's such a very useful skill. And this Kellogg partnership is helping us get more opportunity for blind kids to learn more Braille and to learn more about the participation of blind people in the workplace. Now, there is a Shelbert workshop system in the United States. It was established a long time ago. The first Shelbert workshop was created and just in connection with a school for the blind in about 1840. Many people don't know this history, and I'm not going to go over all of it. But in 1938, there was a workshop bill that was passed that said if you're running a Shelbert workshop, you can sell things to the federal government. And so the blind made products came into being. Nowadays, you have blind workshops, and you have workshops for other disabled people, and there's a lot of argument that goes on about whether or not these programs ought to favor blind people or the otherwise disabled, and the Ability One folks who are running these workshops, they keep wanting to take Randolph Shepherd vending locations away from the Randolph Shepherd program and to put them into the hands of sighted people who run workshops who say that they're helping out the blind, and very often they help out the blind by paying them less than the minimum wage.
Yeah.
And when they pay them less than the minimum wage, they say, yeah, but they'd be sitting at home doing nothing otherwise. And you say to yourself, is this the kind of help you had in mind? And so, recently, the Ability One folks got together, and they decided that they were going to have a new entity that was going to give away government contracts. What they do is they get central nonprofit agencies, as they call them, or CNAs, to determine who will get the government contracts. And so you have this federal entity that sets up these programs to give away the government contracts. And they've had two so far, NIB, which used to be National Industries for the Blind, and then they have Ability One, which used to be NISH, which used to be National Industries for the Severely Handicapped. So anyway, they have those people giving away these federal contracts, and there are billions of dollars worth of these federal contracts. Somewhere between, last time I checked, $2 and $3 billion, maybe more than that now. And they set up so that they announced, without any advance warning or anything, that they were going to establish a new entity to be a central nonprofit agency to distribute federal contracts in areas requiring knowledge work. What is knowledge work? Well, I'm sure somebody will define it sometime, but anyway, this is involving knowledge work. And they decided to say that the AFD was going to get the knowledge work opportunity to give away federal contracts. Okay? However, they hadn't announced it ahead of time. They hadn't had a competitive bid. They hadn't followed the federal contract guidelines for determining who was going to get a federal contract. They hadn't told anybody about it. They hadn't published it in the Federal Register. And besides which, how do they know that the American Foundation for the Blind knows how to do this? They've never done it before. They've never demonstrated that they can get anybody a job before. We sued them. Now, the suit that we filed hasn't gone very far yet. As a matter of fact, the last time I knew, the folks over in the Ability One area haven't even filed their answer to the lawsuit yet. But they can't do that. They can't get away with deciding that they're going to give away billions of dollars of federal contracts without telling us about it ahead of time, without giving us the opportunity to bid on it if we want to, without giving us the chance to be a part of the decision-making that goes into the program. We are a part of this. As a matter of fact, we are the people who are involved in this. They're going to decide our lives without even telling us about it ahead of time. And where have they got their mind if they don't think they have to talk to the blind people who are going to be involved? That's what we're doing. Now, Mr. President, we have the Accessibility Technology Affordable Act coming up, which is H.R. 1734 and S.732, and that gives us a tax credit, a refundable tax credit. That gives blind people a refundable tax credit so that we can buy technology and write it off on our taxes. Now, there are limitations. $2,500, you can't buy anything for more than that. I mean, you can't write it, okay, I'm buying what you want, of course, but you can't get a refundable tax credit for more than $2,500. You can do this over a period of 3 years if you want, but those 3 years are a limitation. I don't know whether there's an income limitation, but the last time I looked at the thing, there was an income limitation to it. So, if you're earning more than, I don't know, $75,000, you don't get it. But that will get a lot of technology into the hands of a bunch of blind people. Now, the government has decided that this is a very, very expensive program, and they've scored this at a couple of $1 billion, which, of course, is ridiculous. I wish they could find all the blind people and tell us where they are that they think are going to buy all this technology. I mean, the fellas who are in the technology companies, they think $2 billion, I'd love that. Show me where the people are, you know. They want to know where $2 billion worth of purchasing power is that might buy this technology. So we're going to get them to rescore the bill because they've scored it very high, and why they think it is that high, I do not know. But they think there are a lot of blind people out there just longing for more technology. Well, I buy technology all the time, so if I would just fit into the income guidelines, which at the moment I don't, maybe I could get some of this tax credit. But I urge you to get a hold of your members of Congress and get them to support the Affordable Technology, the ATAA, H.R. 1734 and S.732. Then we have the Instructional Materials and Higher Education Act. And that's H.R. 1772 and that's S.2138. And that one is going to get accessible the colleges and universities to adopt accessible technology. It says they got to do it, and it says if they do it, then they probably won't be sued by us, they won't be sued by us because they'll have a protection, but they'll have to adopt standards that are put together by a standard-setting body that's been set up so that we can get accessible higher education materials and you can get the assignments in your classes. Today, there are these programs that are used by people in colleges that you have to sign up for, and you communicate with your professor using this program, and you get your assignments by using this program, and you give the professor your assignments using this program, and they're inaccessible. And if you can't find out what the professor wants you to do, and if you can't write your documents and submit them to the professor at the same time that other people do, it's very hard to get through college. And so they're setting up the technology programs in the education system so that we're being cut out of those, and we've got to stop that. And we've talked about the Time Act. This is the transition to integrated and meaningful employment, and we're trying to get that one through also. The Time Act is H.R. 1377, and we want to get that through. That eliminates the supplemental wage. Now, only a couple more things, Mr. President. I'll get done. Autonomous vehicles, you know? We want to be able to do stuff. So there's an act called the AV START Act. It's the Autonomous Vehicle Safe Transportation Using Advanced Research Technology. Ha! I got it. AV START. And there's a provision of that act that says you can't discriminate against the blind by putting together a requirement that you be able to have a driver's license of the traditional kind, or that you build technology that does not have accessibility built into it. And so we're urging that we support this, and a whole bunch of senators have decided that it's a good idea to have autonomous vehicles on the streets, because they say when they work properly as they're supposed to do, then we have much safer streets. And that's S-1885, and I urge that we also support that. Now, Mr. President, we have the Bell program, but you're going to cover that elsewhere, right? All right, good. And there are some other science programs that we run, and we give away all kinds of things like canes and slates and styluses and things like that. And we have the free newsline program, as we talked about. And then there is the need to support the National Federation of the Blind with your money. Don't forget that. You thought I might forget that. I don't forget things like that. Back in 1977, I guess it was, became the chairperson of the PAC program. And currently Scott LaBar is the chairperson of the PAC program. Now and then, he urges me to believe that his time of service is coming to a close, which I don't believe. So I keep asking him to keep it up and things like that. But PAC is a way for each of us individually to support our national organization. And I ask people for money from lots and lots of places, and I think it's a good idea to ask people for money. But I think if we don't believe it's good enough for us to support it, then why do we believe somebody else should? I think that's a reasonable way to look at it. I believe in supporting our national organization. I also believe in supporting our state organization. So where are we on PAC, Mr. President? Well, I don't want to argue with the president here. He says maybe we're 23rd. My list shows Indiana at number 34. And it says there are $409.50. Now, I have bad news. You think that's wrong, Mr. President?
Well.
Yes, he does. What he said was, well, and I knew that man, yes, he thought that was wrong.
The last time we were 28.
Now, here, let me tell you what the bad news is. The bad news is that we recently reorganized all of the accounting systems in the national office, and we discovered that there was a double count in parts of the PAC plan program. So when we redid it, lots of people went, "Hey, hey, hey, what happened?"
Yeah.
And you may say that to me.
Yeah.
I'm telling you what the list says, and I think the list is right, but then the last time I told you what the list said, I thought the list was right too. So can you count on this? Well, I think so.
We really worked on it.
We worked pretty hard on it. And Patricia Maurer says she spent the last, she tells me when I'm wrong, so don't. You can tell her when you think she's wrong. It's okay. She said she's worked on it for the last 2 months to make sure it's right. So anyway, this thing says that Indiana's number 34 at $409, and that Kansas is ahead of you at $416. And then you've got number 32, and that's New Hampshire. And number 31 is Kentucky. And number 30 is Oklahoma. And number 29 is Michigan. And number 28 is the District of Columbia, which is where Mark DeCabono is at the moment. And that's at $480. And number 27 is Mississippi. And number 26 is Tennessee, and if you want to be in the top 25, that is North Carolina at $519. So I urge that we get on the PAC plan and build the opportunity to make our organization bigger and better. We've raised more money in the PAC plan than in any other internal kind of fundraising that we've done in the National Federation of Blind over the years. Currently, it's about $500,000 or a little less a year. And that comes out to a lot if you figure the number of years we've done it. It certainly was not nearly that high when I was running the program. Now, Mr. President, I observe that it's 10:03, and I imagine you don't have time for any questions. Do we?
Okay, let's take the time.
All right, questions.
Becca,
please tell me who you are.
Becca Blackburn.
Becca Blackburn.
Yes. So the Time Act.
Yep.
I work for a nonprofit organization, and it's been coming up that there's an issue where they're trying to. Oh.
You have a mic.
This issue that's been constantly coming up, whether or not we, or whether or not that nonprofit organization will continue, I guess, continue to be established, because they're saying that they want all blind people to be integrated into a more mainstream, like working for mainstream companies versus the nonprofit organizations. So they've been asking us to call our legislators and combat this issue. Can you give me some insight on that? Like, is that going against the Time Act? Because the company still pays minimum wage.
Yeah. There are two questions that happen in sheltered employment, and one of them is whether or not you pay the minimum wage, and the other one is whether or not you're dealing with integrated employment. And it's legal to do both things, pay sub-minimum wage and to deal with the segregated employment. However, the Rehabilitation Act and all of the provisions of that encourage employment in the mainstream area, and encourage it so much that there is less support for sheltered employment. It's not, the Time Act deals only with the sub-minimum wage question, but the integration into mainstream employment is part of the Rehabilitation Act, and the implementation of the provisions of that act would mean that there would be more integrated employment and less segregated employment, and that's where the future is going. Now, I'll tell you my own opinion. I've now answered your question.
Yes.
Okay. Let me give you my opinion, however.
Yes, sir.
My opinion is that today, government contracts get given to people who put folks into segregated employment. And you know and I know that there is such a thing as segregated employment.
Yes, sir.
I suspect that Bosma has it. I think we're talking about Fosma, right?
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. All right. Now, there is a sheltered workshop in the United States that has a contract with Boeing. And they pay better than the minimum wage. They pay $18 an hour, $19 an hour, something like that. And they say, and they break their arms, patting themselves on the back, saying, isn't this great that we've got people working here on an $18, $19 an hour contract, and we're making parts for Boeing aircraft, and you look around this place and they say, we have special equipment, and they have intense lighting on their machines, and they have jaws on some of their computers and things like that. And they say, aren't we wonderful? Well, if you're paying $18 an hour for a machinist, that might be pretty good, except that machinists who work not in sheltered workshops make $60 an hour, unless they make $70 an hour. So you think to yourself, maybe segregated employment isn't as good as being employed in the mainstream. Now, the guys who are in the mainstream, they don't know how to make a machine usable by blind people, so they think it can't be done, and the guys in the Shelby workshop think they know how to do it, so they think it can be done, and they take the difference between 16 or 18 or 19 bucks and 60 or 70 bucks, and they get to keep that for management. And the managers of these places make lots and lots of money. But the workers don't make so much. Now me, I'd rather get the 60 or 70 bucks an hour. And consequently, figuring out a way for knowledge employment to be used in the mainstream strikes me as a great idea, which is why we're suing the Ability One crowd for taking this contract and giving it to the American Foundation for the Blind that doesn't know what it's doing. Because we think if we could get a contract with Boeing to hire these blind machinists at 60 or 70 bucks an hour and figure out how to get them a federal contract of some kind, it would be much better for the workers.
Right. Oh, yes.
That's my opinion. We haven't implemented this. All I'm doing is telling you that I'm thinking out loud that the workers need more opportunities.
So, we're
Rebecca Black.
Yeah. So, okay. So, like, how do we approach that when they bring that to us, without undoing what we're striving for?
Don't get a hold of your congressman and tell him you want the contract to fail. Listen all you want to, but don't do it.
Gotcha. And, and when I asked them if it was a time act, and they said it had nothing to do with that, but it does seem like it's kind of intertwined some kind of way.
It is. And furthermore, there's a rule about integrated employment which says you can get credit for integrated employment, but it doesn't apply to sheltered workshops. And that's a credit in the rehabilitation sphere. And the rehabilitation fellows and the sheltered workshops have been trying to get that rule reversed. That rule has been in effect since 2000. It's been in there for 18 years, and they hate it. They say, you're taking my workforce from me because, and they say they don't get special recognition for placing people at the jobs in the segregated shops, and they're right about that. They should be integrated.
All right, thank you.
Right.
That'll be all. Let's give them a hand.